Change is inevitable. We can't sit back and expect change to not occur. The number one recommendation I would have for our patient experience leaders is pay attention to the emotional effort it takes, especially in the healthcare space, to do the work of providing care. We add layers onto the work. No one got into healthcare because they want to do checklists and they go through several steps just to provide care. They just want to help somebody in their time of need.
Welcome to Humanizing Healthcare, where we talk with innovators and thought leaders who are working to make healthcare experiences more compassionate and rewarding for all. Our host is Chris Malone, founder of Fidelum Health and author of the award-winning book, The Human Brand: How We Relate to People, Products, and Companies.
Welcome and hello. I'm Chris Malone and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to start by welcoming our friend, colleague, and program partner, Siobhan Bernanke. Siobhan is the Vice President of Global Services at Plaintree, which is a global not-for-profit organization dedicated to humanizing healthcare for everyone through excellence in person-centered care. Welcome, Siobhan. What can you tell us about our guest today?
Hi, thank you for having us on today. So Dwight McBee served as a Senior VP and Chief Experience Officer at RWJ Barnabas Health, New Jersey's largest and most comprehensive academic health system. He is responsible for the advancement and integration of patient experience strategies and priorities to align them with RWJ Barnabas's health's mission, values, and business goals, and works collaboratively with facility and system leadership teams to develop and execute strategic planning of patient experience and patient engagement initiatives. Mr. McBee holds a dual role, also serving as the Chief Patient Experience Officer for the system's flagship academic facility, Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Dwight is a seasoned healthcare executive with a proven track record of success. He's a four-time nationally recognized Becker's Healthcare Review Chief Experience Officer to Know and is the 2025 recipient of the prestigious National Humanism in Medicine Medal from the Arnold P. Goldfried Foundation. Dwight's previous leadership roles include Executive Vice President, Clinical Health Equity, and Chief Experience Officer at Jefferson Health, serving the Greater Philadelphia region, as well as Vice President and Chief Experience Officer for Temple University Health System, serving North Philadelphia. Dwight's passion for patient-centered care is fueled by his daughter's experience living with Rett syndrome. He graduated from Thomas Jefferson University with a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing and received his MBA from Stockton University. Dwight is recognized as the national voice for patient experience professionals and serves on the Patient Experience Policy Board for the Barrel Institute. Dwight is also our first return guest to the Humanizing Healthcare podcast. Dwight, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me back. I appreciate the introduction, Siobhan and Chris. Here we go again, right?
That's right. Thank you. Great to have you back. You are, I think, our second or third guest on the program way back in 2023, and we thank you so much for joining us again. And I would love to start with how you found your way into healthcare. You shared a bit about that personal journey when we spoke back in 2023, but I think it's such a compelling story that I wouldn't mind hearing again for the benefit of our newer listeners.
You know, I started my healthcare journey forged by the fires of life is the way I would describe that. I never had an intention to be a healthcare professional. I actually was working for a cable company in my late teenage years, but I grew up with a small family in Southern New Jersey. And I was very close to my brother and sister. And my sister had sickle cell growing up, sickle cell anemia. And for those of you who know a little bit about sickle cell anemia, it's a genetic disorder that can be incredibly painful when individuals go through a crisis. And so growing up, I was always there for my sister in that way. But unfortunately, one Thanksgiving, my sister was hospitalized. And this was in the late 90s when we didn't have cell phones. We really had to communicate the old-fashioned way on telephones. And she would call the house because she was having trouble with the clinical team responding to the call bell. And I remember that experience distinctly, that she was just having so much trouble. And unfortunately, that day, she passed away suddenly at the bedside. And so, you know, that was my initial entry into nursing. I jumped right into critical care as an ICU nurse, learned how to sort of translate my affinity for technology and into the bedside, and so managed the complexity of care. But as Siobhan mentioned in the opening, throughout the course of time, I had been given opportunities to lead in different capacities in nursing, but my daughter was born with a condition called Rett syndrome. And that's another genetic disorder, very challenging in that the individuals are unable to speak. My daughter doesn't really use her hands. And so I am a full-time advocate for my daughter. My wife and I are full-time advocates for my daughter. And I understand the importance of not only the lived experience for patients, but the lived experience for their caregivers. And I try to incorporate the totality of all of those experiences into the work that I do in leading patient experience for the health system.
It gives you a special kind of perspective and empathy, I think, for the experience that both patients and family members have.
Sure.
Now, with your foundation in ICU nursing, how does that inform your approach to the work you do now, kind of a system level strategy standpoint? Do you find yourself still drawing on that background?
I absolutely do. Any nurse that becomes a leader is familiar with looking at, taking a step back at what we do in healthcare and looking at it as a sort of a system in and of itself, right? A human system. It's got many parts to it and each part is interdependent upon one another. Being an ICU nurse, I was used to seeing systems fail and there's precursors to systems failing. One system would sort of overcompensate for another. So I absolutely can see how my nursing background helps to problem solve and develop strategies to mitigate issues even before they become really system failures. The other piece of this is really it helps me translate what we do at the leadership level to our frontline teams. Critically important to make that connection, right? Well, why are we making this change? Well, what is behind that change? And helping to translate that using the nursing background really has been really helpful for me. It's afforded me the opportunity to make connections to important work in a very real way for the people that are doing the work.
Yeah. And I imagine having walked in their shoes as a frontline clinician, you are better able to appreciate the challenges they have as well as be a translator of more senior level strategies and insights and so on.
Yeah, especially as it relates to patient experience. You know, patient experience is often sort of the fruit of the culture of the organization. Mm-hmm. And in nursing, you always think about your patient holistically. What's behind this illness? What's behind this health encounter for you? What are your social networks around you? What are the social determinants in your life, right? And so in a nursing sense, we're always sort of taking a step back. And, you know, when we think about patient experience, there's all these little pieces that our culture sort of add to the experience. And for us in leadership, we always look to get after that in a holistic way. And that's why experienced leaders typically found in almost every room. We navigate wherever the data and the insights are telling us to navigate to. And I certainly can see my experience in nursing helping to diagnose it in a very real way.
Now, for those who might not be as familiar with RWJ Barnabas Health, can you tell us a little bit about that organization and what kind of things you are focused on right now as initiatives?
Sure. So as Siobhan mentioned in the beginning, RWJ Barnabas is a 15 hospital health system in the Northeast in New Jersey. We're the largest provider of healthcare services here in the state. We have about 700 care locations when you include ambulatory and med practice. It's the organization, fun fact, where I actually started my nursing career in ICU and now I found
that
back. Yeah, so that's a little fun fact, wow. Right? You know, we have a CEO in Mark Manigan, who I think you met, Chris, at one of our leadership sessions. And we have a mantra, it's one system, one family. And I love having a leader that, you know, sees us as a family. We're very much that in that way. And my job within this family here at RWJ Barnabas is to transform the way we listen to patients. We listen to family members and we take a systems approach to sensing and detecting human experiences. And so two ways that we do that, if I were to highlight a couple of things, everybody rounds, right? We're certainly consistent with the best practice in making sure our nurses are rounding every hour, our nurse leaders are rounding, our senior leaders are rounding, our non-clinical teams are rounding. And we're really leaning in now on the quality and the effectiveness of those rounds. Are we doing this in a way that's meaningful to with our patients in partnership with them, in partnership with their families? And how are we gaining insights in real time to then create a better experience, right? So it's listening in a very agile way, leveraging the people that are spending time with our patients to facilitate those insights. The other way we're transforming listening, when I came into the organization a year ago, we have patient experience leaders and frontline teams at every single facility. And they were sort of isolated in their facilities. And now we're working together in a centralized advocacy team. And we've been able to stand up an intake center, a way that our patients can communicate with us at any time when the need arises. And it allows us to take the full strength of our teams, wherever they are, to field those concerns and get them to the right people, again, in the right time. So all of this listening is anchored on the idea that we want to listen in real time and turn a situation that could potentially be a bad experience into a better experience simply because of the timing that we're relaying information from one point in the system to another. I like to think of it as sort of a nervous system, and we want to relay that message as quickly as possible so we can cause the system to sort of remodel itself in a very agile way.
Has that required the adoption of some new technologies for routing those requests and collecting those feedback in real time? Anything you can share there?
Yeah, like everyone else, you know, we've got a tool, right? A digital information capture system that allows us, when we're rounding on our patients, to enter information into that tool. That tool is connected to our database of employees, so we can send that information over to the right person. We leverage call center technology as well to connect all of our patient experience leaders in a cloud-based system, so we can field calls, record calls, and then forward issues to the right person in real time. There's real value in listening to our patient experience calls, and there's real value in sharing some of the emotion behind the concerns that we're getting with those that are involved in the care experience, our nursing teams, our providers as well. It's really a game changer for us when we can walk into a room and instead of showing a chart with how you're doing in patient experience, we can actually press play and a patient can share their concern or their compliment and the team for them to hear it. So there's call center technology, there's rounding technology, and there's several other ways we could probably get into later on how we're listening in a very different way.
Now, there's a lot of change underway in the healthcare in this country. One of your colleagues recently spoke at a conference talking about how we can prepare for a healthcare landscape that is marked by uncertainty. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, how can patient experience leaders and other healthcare leaders prepare themselves to manage through this kind of rapid change? Any words of wisdom or perspective you have on that?
Yeah, change is inevitable. We can't sit back and expect change to not occur. It is occurring. It will occur. And we as experienced leaders need to get ahead of it and stay ahead of it. I think the number one recommendation I would have for our patient experience leaders, or really anyone in any industry, is pay attention to the effort, the emotional effort it takes, especially in the healthcare space, to do the work of providing care. There are times because of coding requirements or, you know, documentation requirements or regulatory requirements, we add layers onto the work. And no one, at least that I know, got into healthcare because they want to, you know, do checklists and they want to follow, you know, different policies and they want to, you know, go through several steps just to provide care. No, they just want to provide care. They just want to help somebody in their time of need. And so what we're paying attention to, and I would recommend all of our experienced leaders to pay attention to, is that disconnect between what we have to do and why people are in the roles that they're in to provide care. And how do we shorten that distance between the two? Obviously, there's going to always be a regulatory need, a compliance need, a safety need, but how do we create a way that allows people to connect to their why in the everyday? We need to sort of restore everyone's ability to care in a way that they're capable of. You know, it's paying attention to the end user experience, looking at the impact of the EMR. How many steps does it take for you to get from point A to point B in the care delivery process? That's where experienced leaders can do the most in terms of this changing landscape, because we really can't tell you what change is coming. We can just tell you that change is coming. The other thing I think about is, you know, the fact that we're in the healthcare space, we witness a lot, and we do witness a lot of suffering. There's suffering that we witness that we can do nothing about. You know, there's a traumatic event, something that, you know, is just completely outside of your control. Then there's the micro suffering, you know, the things that people suffer through that we might be able to help with. You know, you see somebody's been delayed, their family member's been delayed in coming out of surgery. Can we get them a meal? Can we get them a cup of coffee? How do we empower and enable everyone with a badge to address the micro suffering that we see along the way? And I think that's a space where experienced leaders can work. The final thing I'll say is give people space, allow people to create their own way to address issues as they come up. I'll give you an example. It's a really touching example, and it's a way that we sort of think about creating space. So we had an unfortunate event where four family members were in a car. The father was driving. He was tired. They pulled over on the road, and the wife got out to take over. And unfortunately, they were hit by a Mack truck, and three of the four family members unfortunately passed away. The surviving child in that incident was admitted. And the nurse that was assigned to this patient had lived through something very similar. And so she was empathetic. She understood. And, you know, she sort of came to the table with her own idea of how to best care for this little child. It was very unfortunate that the child lost a sister whose name was Maddie. And the nurse's name was also Maddie. And the nurse, having full awareness of what we need to do to make a difference for people and how we need to sort of be, you know, provide care in a very patient-centered way, chose to change her name while she was caring for that patient. I mean, it's just the amazing things, but, you know, it's how do we create space for the inevitable things that come up? And I think that's a real intentional tactic we need to take on as experienced leaders to sort of celebrate that when that happens and then encourage more of it.
That resilience in that moment, having been through what she experienced and the emotional, you know, that she must have experienced just being a part of the care team for that situation is just really admirable.
That's what it takes, right? But I think we need to invite more of that. And as experienced leaders, when we hear about that, champion it, be intentional about creating space and ask everyone to equip themselves with something that might sort of not necessarily be on the beaten path, but do what it takes, because there's always some uncertainty that we're dealing with in the healthcare environment.
No question about it. Now, many patient and provider experiences, when a new initiative is launched, they often enjoy fanfare when they're announced, but it can be challenging to maintain the momentum after the enthusiasm fades. What, in your experience, are some of the most common barriers to success that you've seen at the system level for kind of sustaining those initiatives, and any advice on how we can work past them?
This is such an important topic, Chris, so thanks for asking the question. I'll say that we feel so good about doing a new thing. We want to do new things. You know, the data is not where we need it to be. The trend is not good. So let's do something new. And when we do those new things, they can tend to be a distraction from the right thing. And so I'm not saying doing new things isn't the right move, but evaluate whether or not doing something new is actually necessary. Because in my experience, the best way to make sure that you sustain a movement is to continue with the movement and not sort of deviate from what you started. So consistency over intensity is what I would say. Sometimes we're super intense. We want to do this new thing. We want to be great. And let's listen, 10 other hospitals are doing it. Let's do it. But is that right for you? And is that interrupting the momentum that you have in another space that's also helping and getting you the outcomes that you're looking for? The other piece is, you know, I think when we start something, we start with great ideas, but we don't necessarily measure the right things. We're looking at the lagging measure, the outcome, right? We want to see the patient experience improve. And are we really measuring engagement around this? Are we measuring, you know, the process steps along the way? So when we think about what we're starting, we should really start with, well, how are we going to measure the sustainment of this work? For rounding, for an example, we've done 2.5 million rounds over the past 2 years. That's a lot of rounding. And right now that's great. You know, with the compliance of rounding is very high. And we're talking about, well, how's the quality of rounding? And now we're focused on, well, let's measure the quality of this round. Let's measure the times that we intervene and we coach to make sure that rounding is being done in a consistent and highly reliable way. way. And, you know, my team is amazing. I've got amazing talent on the team that are always thinking about the right measurements to make sure that the work that we started is sustained. So shout out to Sean Harvey, Jill Fenimore, and amazing members of my team, Diane Johnson as well, who are helping to lead some of our rounding work, because, you know, that's what it takes. It takes those that are interested in the work to be sustained to constantly monitor how we're measuring that sustainment. And then when we get all the measurement right, then be transparent about it, right? Share that broadly, make sure that it's in front of the right people all of the time so that if there is a drop off, there's an early indicator of such.
Wow. So in short, it sounds like focus, ensure that we're not kind of being distracted perhaps by shiny objects too often, as well as measuring engagement, not just outcomes along the way. Yep. So that you can then report all of that transparently when you have the trailing measures.
That's a great way to sum it. Yep.
Excellent. Now, in another recent interview, you talked about the importance of magnifying the mundane to shine light on the small but meaningful elements of an excellent care experience. I was wondering if you could tell us more about what you meant by that.
Yeah, well, one day I hope to be like you, Chris, and write a book, and maybe that's the title of my book, you know.
Magnify the mundane. I like that.
I
said already.
So I think the idea is that there's a sea of sameness in healthcare. You know, you show up every day, you register your patient, you're admitting another patient, you're doing another med pass, whatever it is in healthcare, it tends to become routine, become mundane, not just for you as the person that's delivering care, but even our patients. It's just like, okay, it's the routine. Yeah, I got to give you my name, date of birth. And the idea of magnifying the mundane is an idea about, well, how do we elevate even small things along the way? How do we take routine moments and make them special? The hotel and retail industry tend to do more of this, right? You know, you walk in and it's just an event, right? When you come into their service experience. And how do we sort of tap into that in healthcare? And I think there's little things that we're doing along the way. So if you're a patient in some hospitals and you're in a hospital bed and you look up, some hospitals will paint a ceiling tile, right? And those are little examples of what you can do to kind of break the monotony. I've seen physicians, instead of handing you a business card, hand you a baseball card. And on the back of that baseball card, instead of stats, you'll see, you know, so sort of information about them. But those are ways that we can break up the routine and make it feel a little bit more special. Back to sort of empowerment. I'm a believer in sort of empowering our workforce to really magnify the mundane in those structured ways, but also the magic's in the unstructured ways. You know, it's raining outside and, you know, you're just the transporter, but, you know, maybe you have the ability to run to the gift shop and just buy an umbrella, right? Those are the kinds of things that can kind of break things up and become memorable. Because at the end of the day, when we're measuring experiences and we're focused on loyalty and we're focused on making sure patients get the best, highest quality of care, we want them to reflect on the totality experience. And these little things along the way help them remember the steps that they took on their healthcare journey.
I'm glad to hear you mention the well-being of caregivers, because your system earned an AMA Joy in Medicine Honors in the past for improving provider well-being. I was wondering how you prioritize those dual commitments of patient experience and provider experience in the work that you do.
It's so important that we take care of the humans that are providing that human experience. And we're a firm believer in the high reliability culture. And that's what I would point to. You know, we drop people into complexity and we want to make sure that we're learning, we're listening, and we're learning all the time. And so we share a lot transparently. We share safety stories. We share moments where the care delivery system could be improved and how our staff, our teams, our providers contributed to early warnings of things that could have gone wrong for patients. I think that embedding storytelling in our culture is a way that we can honor the people that are doing the work, honor the ways that when we speak up, we can create a difference. And then when people do speak up, make that change. That's one of the keys that we've been able to accomplish in our journey for Joy in Medicine. Another way is celebrate curiosity. There's no retribution. There's no retaliation if somebody just says, well, why are we doing that? Right. And I think that is, we need to do more of that in healthcare, is create opportunities for us just to stop and say, well, explain to me again why this is important. Even if it's absolutely apparent to everybody in the room except for one person, be okay with creating space for curiosity, because there likely is somebody that might be left behind, might not be fully engaged, might have that unresolved thing. And unless and until we resolve it, you won't have everybody on board. And I think it's concepts like celebrating curiosity in this organization that have really gone a long way. And then finally, I would say there's going to be times where we let our coworkers down or our patients down. And we've taken a concerted effort around professionalism. And we partnered with Vanderbilt on their professionalism program. And we take very seriously when someone has the courage to speak up. And we want to honor everybody involved. And so anyone that's familiar with that program, there's a very informal conversation about that thing that went wrong in a safe environment with someone that's trained to facilitate that conversation. And I think that commitment to professionalism and even addressing things when they go wrong in a way that honors everybody involved is another key to the success we've seen in this space. So a lot of things coming together, but I would just summarize it all in our culture around higher liability.
And I really like what you had to say about fostering curiosity, particularly in a landscape that is changing so frequently. We need to have the freedom to ask, hey, is this still the right thing to do? Or is this an opportunity for us to adapt and evolve? And so as we look forward and you think, you know, say 5 years ahead, how do you envision the role of the chief experience officer evolving in the future, particularly as relates, you know, to hospitals that integrate AI and digital health advances and things of that nature?
The first thing I'll say is the chief experience officer role is constantly evolving. We ebb and we flow. Sometimes there's a proliferation of chief experience officers. Sometimes there's a deficit and we see roles being eliminated. And obviously some of the pressures that we see financially, it's easy to sort of make the decision that, well, patient experience could be handled by five other people. I like to think of that scene in Toy Story. I don't know if you've ever seen it, where the mom's coming in to clean up all the toys and she brings out the plastic bag and all the toy army soldiers like take off. They're like, okay, when the trash bags come out, we're the first to go. So we're out of here. Well, sometimes it can feel like that in patient experience, but the reality is the future, we will certainly see an exponential increase in non-human experiences. But that said, there will be an increasing need for us to maximize the human experiences that we do have. And also that human to non-human interface, right? That human to machine interface, we will absolutely need to over-index in that space. I mean, take a look at how anyone talks to any AI right now. There's not a whole lot of please and thank you, right? And so we're going to probably degrade a bit. And I think chief experience officers and experienced leaders are positioned really well to help us make the most out of the human experiences we will have. And I think there's going to always be an ever increasing expectation for us to deliver a high value on the experiences that we're having. And AI, I think, is certainly something that we'll navigate with. I don't like to think of AI as a thing. I think of it as a tool. It is a tool. It is something that will be continuing to leverage, and it will make a lot of things that we do every day now a lot easier. Automation is a real thing. In fact, as we centralize our advocacy team, one of the things we're going to sit beside all of our team members is AI, right? And so we can summarize a call, we can take the information and plug it into an event reporting system without a lot of human intervention. That will absolutely give us capacity. But it's what do we do with that new capacity that will make the difference for us? And so we will likely see in the future an increase in automation, an increase in capacity for leaders. And I think the work of the experienced leaders is to really point that to the right challenge, those human experiences that we want to maximize and see the full potential. I see a future where we're going to see a lot more of the human spirit, the spiritual nature, the sacred nature of healthcare come to the forefront, right? So, you know, you think about it, you're here, you're a patient, you're in your most vulnerable state. You got a lot going on, and we need to deliver more than medicine and testing. And if we automate a lot and we get some capacity back, we should be thinking about, well, what else? How else can I support you holistically? How are you really doing? And I think we're going to see more of a willingness for experienced leadership to go into that sacred space and honor the whole person in that way. How many people do we discharge today and they're still broken spiritually? We're going to have a time where that's going to be part of all of our work.
Well, I hope, as you say, that as we gain efficiencies through automation, that we can invest that time in those human emotional concerns, because there is always going to be there and it can't be handled through automation.
Yeah.
Now, given that your rise from an ICU nurse to being chief experience officer at three different organizations, What is your advice for those who may be listening that might aspire to a leadership role like that in their career? Any watch outs, rules of thumb, or coaching that you might offer for those that might aspire to roles like yours?
I mentor a lot of experienced leaders in the industry, and my number one recommendation for them is to understand the value of patient experience. We're so good at serving, we're not good at building the business case for ourselves. We struggle in making the connection to this work and the value it brings to the organization, the growth it brings to the organization, the savings it can bring to the organization. And so hone your skill in your ability to demonstrate and articulate the value you're bringing to your organization. More patients will come, less patients will leave your organization, greater network integrity. You've got to be able to quantify that in order to demonstrate your value to the organization. I would also say that there's a need for you to get comfortable with some operations. There's going to be a time where you can't just work in the strategy role. You're going to have to take on some blocking and tackling and execution, whether it's, you know, food and nutrition services or, you know, the hospital operators or some other operational role. You're going to have to move into those spaces as an experienced leader, and you're going to have to sort of brush up your ability to execute. I think at some point, everyone in healthcare is going to need to be able to execute. The last thing I'll say on this is experienced leaders can tend to fall into this data and analytics role, and we're, you know, sitting back on the data and we're designing surveys. Unless you're close to the need, you're going to lose sight of why you're doing what you're doing. And so stay proximal to the need, stay close to patients, stay close to family members, stay close to your patient family advisory councils, stay close to your nurses and your doctors, be visible. That's unfortunately what we don't see enough of, is that visibility of that experienced leader, being present in the places where care is being delivered. You'll always stay connected to your why, and you'll always demonstrate the value of the experienced leader in your organization.
Great advice. Really appreciate that. Well, let's take a couple of questions from listeners. We have one here from Sabrina Valvo. How can experienced healthcare marketing and communications professionals successfully pivot into patient experience roles? Any perspective on that?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of resources out there, podcasts like this and Plaintree and Beryl Institute. There's all kinds of great resources. I would definitely spend time understanding the science of patient experience, right? So I just got done saying, don't spend all your time doing the data and analytics and survey design, but you got to know a little bit of that to get your foot in the door. That's part of our value equation is the value-based performance of organizations and how patient experience data is used to either incentivize or penalize healthcare systems. So understand that, but also then get in and understand what patients need, what patients are saying. Get really good at understanding where hassle exists in a health system and be a part of teams. There's lots of teams that are already working on patient experience. I got into this work simply just being close to people that are doing the work. And over time, you will pick up the levers that you can pull to improve performance. So understand the science of it, understand the rationale for patient experience, but then also get close to the work as it's being done. Those are the best things that I would say for somebody looking to make the pivot.
We have another interesting question. Drawing on your background in ICU, Abdullah Asseri says, hello, we receive many staff appreciation letters from patients all over our hospital, except the ICU, since the majority of our patients are unconscious, which makes it difficult for them to celebrate our staff who are appreciated. But ICU staff, from your experience, what can we do to encourage patient families to kind of perhaps get involved in appreciation letters? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's lots you can do. So there's so much emotion in the ICU critical care units. I think they're happy that their loved one gets through that experience. And sometimes you don't hear from them because the emotional letdown afterward, it's hard. It takes a lot of effort for somebody to turn around and say thank you. So make it easier. You know, leave something in the room, whether it's a whiteboard that they can write on and you can say, you know, share your note to the staff, share your feedback to the staff here, or, you know, leave some material in the room where it makes it incredibly easy. Leave a pen, a piece of paper, and leave notes. Hey, if you have any positive, encouraging things you want to share with our staff, leave them here. Make it part of the process of delivering care. And I think you'll get more and you'll be surprised by the amount of emotion and the amount of gratefulness you'll get from patients, family members, because that is the height of emotion in that environment.
Great observation there. Here's a question from Jennifer Beams. Dwight, strong leadership has a profound impact on team dynamics and overall well-being. In your role where ensuring provider well-being ultimately contributes to patient care, what practices or principles have helped you remain grounded and sustain that leadership approach when you're prioritizing growth and well-being of your team, you know, at the same time?
That's such a great question, Jen. Every experienced leader will eventually get to the point where you start to fray. My secret sauce has been my relationship to God. I'm a Christian. I'm a born-again Christian. I spend most of my time outside of work in the church environment with my church family. So absolutely works for me. Obviously, it's not for everyone. So I would say that's number one. Number two is I'm a recent musician. Over the past 3-4 years, I've learned how to play the electronic bass. It is one of my favorite outlets. So just being able to jump on an instrument and play music, you know, I think that for me keeps me grounded. And I would encourage anyone listening to find a way, one of those two options, you know, to work for your, better yet, combine them, because that's what works for me.
Last question, Kareem Ambani. What is the best way to inculcate compassion, empathy, and a culture of safety amongst healthcare providers and frontliners?
You have to be a storyteller in your organization. And the stories you choose can weave together the point of emphasis you're trying to make, whether it's experience, compassion, safety. Be the storyteller. I think if I could do any one thing, if I could wave a magic wand over every leader, it's teaching them the components of an exceptional story. Because if we become storytellers, then you can create a movement. And that's what we're trying to do in patient experience leadership. I would encourage each one of you, study the components of telling a story. Understand how to get people behind you on that, because in that way, you'll be able to message what's most important for your organization at the right time and then embed that in your culture. Start your meetings with a story if you're not already doing it. Find ways to create structure around storytelling so it's not just you, it's everyone. And when you get to that place where you created a space where stories are being told and it, everyone is expected to tell it, you, my friend, now have a movement.
That's great advice. I certainly have seen that in my work as well. Stories are what are remembered. They're the most compelling way to teach something, and that's what draws on your emotions. Now, as you know, I have a favorite final question, and I'm wondering if the answer has changed since we last spoke, and that is, do you have a favorite quote you can share, and if so, why?
My favorite quote, as you know, Chris, is Psalms 46:10. It says, "Be still and know that I am God." You know, when we're faced with so much turbulence, so much change, I'm a believer in stillness. But that said, I would offer a new thing, and this is slightly different. There's a Christian rapper. His name is Eshan Burgundy. He wrote a song, you know, like 2012. And there's one line in the song that I've held on to, and it applies to patient experience. And he said, and he was talking about sort of being remembered. And he says, "People recognize the truth when they encounter it. So if you go unnoticed, then you're counterfeit." I want you to hold on to that because, you know, patient experience is so important. It's the heartbeat of healthcare. People expect us to show up and show up in a very real way for them. And we can't be false. We can't be fake. We can't be distracted. So people will recognize your truth when they encounter it. And so be noticeable.
More wise words from Dwight. Thank you, Dwight. Thank you again for joining us for another inspiring and engaging conversation. It's great to catch up with you and benefit from your expertise and advice. To our listeners, thank you for joining us as well. And in addition, I'm pleased to report that we are working on a new book about how leading healthcare organizations are humanizing the care they deliver for both patients and clinicians. And so if you have an inspiring story, perhaps like the one that Dwight shared, or a case example about how your organization is leading this effort, we would love for us to have the opportunity possibly included in our book. Happy holidays, and we look forward to seeing you again in the new year. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks again, Dwight.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode of Humanizing Healthcare, please give it a rating, share it with others, and follow us at Fidelum Health on LinkedIn. And make sure you join us next time as we share more insights from another inspiring healthcare leader and innovator.